Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone to the continuation of our Kashrus Concept Shurim. With everyone's permission, tonight's shur I'd like to dedicate in memory of my grandmother, my mother's mother, La Shalom, with Karachel Bas Rav Shmuel, whose yahrzeit is tonight. The next, for everyone's knowledge, the next series, or what I'm calling mini-topics, that we're going to discuss is we're going to discuss various halachas which deal with non-Jews and kashrus. Now, there are a number of these. The first one that we will touch on, which is a mini topic, is bishlakum, which means goyim cooking. We'll talk about those halachas. We'll talk about goyim and wine, which is an important topic. We'll talk about things along those lines, dealing with halachas with non-Jews and kashrus. But before I get to the very first one, which I said before is the first one that I want to talk to, bishlakum, goyim talking, cooking, goyim cooking, I wanted to really give an introduction of other halachas, which I'm not going to get into that much, but just like bullet points for people to be aware of. Now, each one of these introductory subtopics, which I'm going to mention at the beginning of tonight's shiur, really on their own could be weeks of classes, literally weeks of classes. But once we're talking about non-Jews in the kitchen, these are topics which a person has to be aware of. Again, I'm not going to get into them that much, but each one, again, is a very important issue for us to be aware of when we have a non-Jew in our kitchen. Now, again, in our society, this is, or anywhere in America, or in Israel also, this is very, very common. We have many, or most, houses have a non-Jewish woman, let's say in Los Angeles might be a Hispanic woman, who's cleaning or doing something in our house, and it might involve something to do with the kitchen. In New York, the same thing applies, or they sometimes Eastern Europeans in Israel, they're Filipinos. So these areas of halacha which deal with non-Jews are very, very important for us to be aware of. Now, as I mentioned before, we'll cover concepts. I'm not teaching you how to pass in a shiloh here, but especially at this beginning phase of tonight's year, these, like I said before, are issues which we have to be aware of, which are extremely important, and some of these areas are very complicated. But I'm just bringing them up not as far as discussion, as far as, I mean, you could bring up questions, which is always welcome, but just as far as bullet points for us to be aware of. Now, again, if you have a non-Jewish person in our homes or in our kitchens, one area of halacha which a lot of people miss is yichud. Yichud means a man cannot be alone with a woman, unless it's his wife, of course, or a very close relative like a daughter or something like that, mother. But if it's more distant than that in general, for a man to be alone for the woman, now again, the prohibition is on both of them, the man and the woman. We have equal opportunity here. If, for example, the woman is married, let's say you have a married Jewish woman alone with a man, that would be a prohibition from the Torah. If not, let's say you have a single girl alone with a single guy, or even not a single guy, so that is also midrabban, that's from Hillel and Shammai. There's certain prohibitions like, with a single person, it might be from the time of David HaMelech. Again, there's a difference of opinion about exactly how we divided this up. But certainly, it's a clear issur for, in most cases, for a man to be alone for a woman. And that applies with a non-Jewish woman, obviously, also. So in other words, if you have Juanita, and she's cleaning your house or whatever she's doing, so it could be that Mr. Goldstein, just to pick a name out of the hat, she's employed by the Goldsteins, and it could be Mr. Goldstein's home, and it could be nobody else's home, or it could be one of the Goldstein boys, who's above a certain age, of nine basically, is at home. And if he's at home with Juanita, that's a problem. It's a big problem. Now, a lot of people know various heterim that are brought down, like if the door is unlocked, or there's a window, or something like that. But you have to be aware that, especially in our day and age, those heterim are not so clear-cut. The reason is because, let's say, if you have an unlocked door, it's unlikely somebody's going to walk in. In other words, the whole idea is that they're really not alone because somebody could walk in at any time. I don't know about you, but if I walk by somebody's house and, you know, I'm not going to just walk in. I'm not going to just walk in. Let's say if there's a window, that might help, but let's say they're not exactly where the window is. Let's say, like in my house, there's a big window, but just off that area, that's where the dining room is. But you just go a little further away from that, that's where the living room is, and you can't see. So it's not so simple that window is going to help. Some other people know the concept of Bailo Be'ir, the husband's in town. Well, that helps, but it's not also so simple in our day and age because, let's say, if you know the husband's not coming back. There is an idea by the Chazon Ish that if somebody has a key and they could come at any time, so that helps for Yichud. Not everybody agrees with that. But again, the general idea that I'm trying to point out is that if Juanita is alone with your husband or your son or whatever, that's a problem. That's a problem. That's a problem. So we have to be aware of the fact that when we have a non-Jewish person working in our house, obviously it could be applied by a man also, if Juan is working in my house, right? Let's say Juan is could be fixing something, or a painter, or I don't know, whatever, and he's fixing something in my house, or the Maytag repairman, right? I don't think he's alive anymore, but whatever the case may be, you get the idea. And he's alone with a wife, a woman. Again, that's a problem. That's a problem. Now, again, there are ways around it, but you have to make sure that you get to those places, things that, those heterim that are legitimate. Now, again, so that's something we have to really be aware of. When we have a non-Jewish woman, again, speaking in generalities, the most practical case is a non-Jewish woman working in a Jewish house, that is a problem. And we have to take care of that problem. That's a challenge. The second area, which, again, as far as introduction, I wanted to discuss, is Shabbos. Shabbos. Now, hopefully in this crowd, people know a little better, but there are many people, unfortunately, who think that a goy could do anything. A goy could do anything in a Jew's house. It's not true. In fact, the rule is just the opposite. The goy could do only what you could do. So in other words, if you want Juanita to, she comes on Shabbos, and you want her to wash the dishes, she can wash dishes, but she can only wash the dishes the way you can wash the dishes. So in other words, without hot water and not using a sponge and all the ways that you have to wash the dishes, she can wash the dishes. Okay, there's such a thing as Daita Nasha, that if she wants to do it a certain way, in other words, it's easier for her. But it's, again, it's not that simple. People have non-Jewish people vacuuming on Shabbos, you know, because she wants to clean up. Now, believe it or not, the halacha is that if she's vacuuming on Shabbos, you have to stop her from doing that. We had that challenge here in Shul because the people used to set up Kiddush and, you know, or clean up after Kiddush, so it came to my attention that they were vacuuming. So it was nice of them, but we have to tell them they're not supposed to do that. And we did. We told them you shouldn't be doing that because it's our Shabbos, it's our Sabbath, and so on and so on. So again, the general rule is whatever you could do, they could do. If you can't do it, they can't do it. So again, that's a very important area of halacha. Now, there is one area where there is a leniency for goy, for non-Jew. I mean, there's a few, but one that I want to point out, and that is if you're more stringent on something, Like, for example, again, I don't want to get into this right now, but the whole area of opening up bottles on Shabbos. So again, in Shul, we usually follow Rav Moshe Feinstein that he holds you shouldn't open bottles on Shabbos. But there are dissenting opinions, so we go like Rav Moshe, and hopefully most of the people go like Rav Moshe. But if for whatever reason there's an extenuating circumstance and you want a goy, you need a bottle open, and so you want to ask a goy to do it, you could do that. In other words, because there are some opinions that disagree, we might not agree with those opinions. But again, for something like that, you can ask a goy to do. You can even ask them directly. Now again, I don't want to get into asking directly, not asking directly, hinting, and all that type of stuff. Again, it's a very complicated area of halacha about amira la'akum. What you could tell a goy, hint, suggest, whatever it is for a goy to do and not, what not to do. It's a very complicated area in halacha. But again, you have to be aware of the fact that on Shabbos, it's not just willy-nilly that a goy could do whatever. They can't. The rule is, again, as I said before, just the opposite. Whatever you could do, they could do. If you can't do it, they can't do it either. So again, that's another challenge with having a non-Jew in our houses. The problem is people think a goy could do anything on Shabbos. They can't. They can't. Third area is Yontif. Now, besides everything that I mentioned before, that, again, the same thing applies by Yontif. If you can't do it, they can't do it. You didn't build your sukkah. Oh, I'll ask Juanita to build it. You know, I got plenty of time. Huh? You'd be surprised. You know, you'd really be surprised that some Ozrot, when, I was trying to say Ozeret, but Ozrot, if they're in a Jewish house for a long time, believe it or not, they know what to do. They sometimes want to do it, and they want to be involved, and they want to be, you know, that's very common. It's very common. So you'd be surprised. They want to hang. I know a family that the Ozeret and her friends come down, half of Guatemala comes down, and they build a sukkah. Now, okay, the schach, but I'm saying the walls and the heavy, they do it. They know how to do it. They Pesach, I know a number of Ozrot who, they come, they know how to clean, they know how to, they know about everything, and they could be surprised. So I don't want to necessarily talk about what kind of goy do and not do on Yontif, because that, again, basically dovetails what we mentioned before by Shabbos. But another area which you'd be surprised a lot of people don't know about, and again, this is not a chumrah, this is a mishnah. Actually, it's a pasuk. It's a pasuk in the Torah, or words in the Torah rather, a word in the Torah, one word in the Torah, that we have to be aware of, anyatif, that does not apply on Shabbos, believe it or not. And that is the whole issue of inviting a non-Jew, or having a non-Jew eating at your house on anyatif. The Torah says, we know there's a very big difference between Shabbos and Yontif. The big difference is cooking and caring, but cooking. You can't cook on Shabbos. We all know that. It's one of the Lama Test Malachas. You're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. And it's complicated. How do we warm up things? How do we not warm up things? And so on and so forth. But on Yontif, you can cook. Okay, we're not talking about transferring fire and all that. Let's leave all the fire stuff aside. But you could cook on Yontif. But the Torah says, Ach asher ye'achel l'chol nefesh u'luvado ye'aseh l'chem. However, cooking, ochel nefesh, could be done for you. And therefore, the Gemara, the Torah Shabbal Peh learns out that it could be done for you. In other words, the only people you could cook for on Yontif is Jews. You cannot cook for a non-Jew. Now, this becomes a challenge, believe it or not, not only as far as an Ozeret is concerned. If Juanita, you know, you have to feed Juanita on Yontif. Now again, this does not apply by Shabbos. We'll explain why in a little while. But again, the issue of cooking for a non-Jew is a big issue on Yontif. Because, I'll give you a very great example. Believe it or not, every shul, there are people who are studying to become gerim. And they become part of the shul, and many times people do not know that they're not Jewish. You know, they daven like everyone else, they shakel just like everyone else. They you know, right? Some of these people are very learned, but they're not Jewish yet. Quoting the famous sage Yogi Berra, "It ain't over till it's over," right? until they actually go through the actual process of go to mikveh for a man, also mila, they're not Jewish. It could be they're doing it tomorrow, right? It could be they're doing it tomorrow, and they're definitely going to do it. There's no question. But it ain't over till it's over. So therefore, they're not Jewish. Therefore, you know, a lot of times people, especially Pesach, right? A Seder, do you invite to a Seder? And these people don't have family, right? Who are they going to go to? So, and people feel close to them. Cheesecake on Yontif, right? On Shavuos, right? Come to a Sukkah, right? We all know how important Yomim Tovim are and family, you know? It's a very important issue. So therefore, a lot of times, people want to invite these people over. And like I said before, a lot of times you don't know, totally unaware of the fact, this person's not Jewish. Don't know. But now, one of the first things they tell a person who's a candidate for Gerus is, you have to be aware of the fact that you can't be invited for Yontif. So if you're integrated into a shul or a community, and somebody comes up to you, so they have to be aware of that. That to invite them to a Yontif meal is a problem because you cannot cook for them. You cannot cook for them. Now again, obviously this applies to Juanita also. So how you get around this is a big challenge. There's a very big machlokas aposkim about how you take care of this. My first in Chicago told me that you should only serve cold, which is, so therefore you're not cooking, which is, you know, some balabuses don't want to do that. Cold meal on Yontif, you know, like, doesn't go. Well, Liashev has a way to get around this. Other people have different ways to get around this issue. But again, you have to be aware of the fact that whether not to compare Juanita or it's somebody in the shul or an a shul who's not Jewish yet, might be very soon, but they're not Jewish yet, you cannot invite them for Yontif. I should explain. The reason is because since you're not allowed to cook for them, Chazal said you cannot invite them because we're scared. Shema Yarba Bishvilo. Maybe you'll make more for them. You'll make more for them. So therefore, you're cooking for them. Therefore, Chazal said you're not allowed to invite them. So that's an issue derabbanan. So you're not allowed to invite them. So again, this is an issue. It's a very big problem which people, I would dare say, a lot of people have no clue about. Now, obviously, this applies to Juanita also. So again, it's a little easier if you're finished cooking and you want to give them stuff that's left over. So again, but people have to be aware that's a very big problem. Now, again, it applies to Juanita, but it also applies, segueing to somebody who might be in the community who's not Jewish yet. Another area of halacha which applies to a non-Jew or having non-Jews work for us is a very important... Oh, I didn't put up the... And that is basar shenis aleim min ha'ayin. Four words. Basar means meat. Shenis aleim, which was hidden. Min ha'ayin, from the eye. And that halacha, again, it's not a chumrah. It's a black and white halacha. And that is that if you have meat and a non-Jew has had possession or control over that meat without a Jew around, so that meat is prohibited. You can't eat that meat. You might notice that on chicken, for example, on chicken there's always what we call plumba. Plumba is like a metal clip, right? Mm-hmm. Or what we also have very often is that, let's say with chicken or something like that, the chicken is wrapped in stretch wrap. And the stretch wrap has the company's name on it, embedded, printed on the stretch wrap. And what that will do is that if you just puncture it, it will just open up, right? Will just destroy the cover. That's done. Now, don't get this. It's by wine, we also have seals, but by wine, you have to have a double seal. Well, you know, I don't know if we'll talk about that maybe briefly, but again, by wine or grape juice, you have to have a double seal. But it's the same concept, and that is that if a non-Jew is in possession of it, so then there's no way they could tamper with it. They won't tamper with it, and the reason why they won't tamper with it is because we'll know if they tampered with it, because the seal would be broken. So again, with meat or chicken, that's why you see these things. And the next time you go to the market, you'll see, you'll now notice it, that they have it sealed in a way that if it was tampered with, we would know. That's for this reason. This is a huge issue. Now, it's whether you have Juanita and you leave the house. So you leave the house, and when you leave the house, how do you know? Maybe, I mean, there's stories like this, believe it or not. Maybe she switched some meat. So you're right. One of the leniencies for this is, let's say you have meat in your freezer. How do you know? Maybe it was switched when she was alone with it. So you're right. If you can recognize it, if you have a tfias ayin, so then the meat's okay. The other heter is if it's sealed. But it has to be one of those two. It has to be one of those two. Now, the reason why I'm bringing it up is not only because of leaving a non-Jew alone with your food, which is an issue. The other reason is because I think things have gotten a little better in this area, but the same thing would apply that if you get a delivery from a restaurant, let's say if it's a Fleishig restaurant, and they deliver whatever it is, something Fleishig, very common, hot dog, hamburger, Chinese, whatever it may be, and they deliver it, if it's delivered by a non-Jew, you cannot eat it, unless it's sealed. I'll tell you a story, and it happened with Debbie and myself. It was a few years ago that Debbie was learning with a girl who was about to get married, and she was about to get married, and she made a very nice gesture. I'm not suggesting anybody do this, but this is just the way the case was. And she told her caterer that whenever the summers need it, deliver dinner for 8 for them. Very nice. So it took about a half a day before we took them up on the offer. And I'll never forget, the caterer truck comes up, and I'm leaving for Mincha. And I see the guy unloading a whole nice meal, and I look, and you could imagine this, the main, the entree, was in one of those aluminum things, and it had the plastic dome on the top, and it had the caterer's sticker on the top of the dome, but it wasn't sealed. Everybody understand what I'm saying? You know, it wasn't sealed. It was just a sticker on the top of the dome. So hypothetically, what the person easily could have done if they wanted to is dump it out and put the Kentucky Fried Chicken or whatever, you know, inside it, and thumb it back closed, and that's it. Literally, I was leaving to shul, and I told Debbie, "You can't eat that. You can't eat it." Now, I hate to tell you, this was not the only story. Invariably, what happened was I was coming home from a shir like this, and it was late, and the kids ate all the food, and Debbie would call some place and order for something for me, Fleishik, and I'd come home and be in a brown bag. No seal on it. Maybe it was stapled, right? But that doesn't mean anything. That's not sealed. That's not discernible. So I would have the same problem. Usually I'd come home and I was really hungry. Like the rest of the day I wasn't hungry, but, right? So anyways, continue with the story about the caterer. So one of the advantages of being a Rav is you have other rabbis' cell phones or pager numbers. So I happened to have the pager number of this Rav, and I paged him, and it happened to be he was landing in LAX on a flight. He got the page, he called me back right away, and I said, you know, this is a story. And I said, you know, I don't accuse anybody of, but I said, isn't this a problem? And he was very upset. And he called the caterer, told him he has to come down. He came while I was away. well, I was at Mincha Maariv, and the caterer came, and he in front of my wife, he looked at the food, said, "Yeah, that's what I sent. That's why I sent out of that." Could be the caterer calling now. Anyway, so he told me, he vowed that, like I said before, that's one of the hetairim. One of the hetairim is if you can recognize food. So he vouched that that was the food, and then we were able to eat it. Now that's not, pardon the pun, any one way to run an airline. And since then, this was a few years ago, I think that hashgacha and other hashgachas have tightened up on this. But you have to be aware of that. Again, whether it's leaving Juanita alone at your house with something unsealed, it's a problem. Again, if you can recognize it, okay. But if you're getting a delivery of fleishik, it's also an issue. Now, really, as far as kashrus is concerned, really, it's not so comfortable if you get delivery of anything. It could be even milchiks, and you're not so, and it's not sealed properly. So Baruch Hashem, there's been strides in that area. So for example, sometimes bakery goods, you go to Ralph's and you could buy kosher bakery goods. So you might notice when you buy a loaf of kosher bread at Ralph's, they've changed things a little. This is very frustrating, but if you buy it at Ralph's, you might notice that they put on, they close it with one of those red things, those sticky red things that you can never take apart. I don't think man has figured out how to undo those things, right? Unless you rip apart the... Now, they do that for that reason, believe it or not, because they're worried that maybe someone will switch the bread if it was just a twisty, right? So that shows you, in a halachic terms, what concept they're applying in that case. And really, that should be done with anything, or like whatever is delivered. How do you know? So you say, well, it's unlikely. You're right, it's unlikely. We're not accusing you, but it could happen. It's possible. And you see in a halacha, we're worried about that, specifically by meat. Just so you should know, also by fish. As you well know, fish is also, there's a problem with fish. Like, you might go to Costco, right? And you want to buy fish, and the fish is gutted and skinned and really nice and filleted and everything, and says salmon on it. All right, everybody knows salmon is a kosher fish. So as you know, you can't buy that fish. You cannot buy that fish. You cannot buy that fish because, how do you know? Unless there's a hashgach on it. So if you go to Costco and you buy the salmon that's in a vacuum sealed thing and it has an OU on it, so that's different. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, you go to Costco or many other places, and they have gutted fish, and they're just filleted pieces of fish. You can't buy those, because how do you know, right? You know, a lot of salmon today is not, you buy it, it's pink, but it's not really pink. They dye it pink. So don't say, well, it's pink! Oftentimes, that salmon is not really pink. They put dye into it, because who would want to buy salmon if it's not pink? You know, it's like a flamingo that's not pink. I don't want to get into flamingos, but you know, flamingos. Okay, let's not go there.
The meat issue. Another thing is when one is delivering meals to somebody like the chesed.
Right, and you just leave it there. Right, it's the same thing. Right, so what would happen is you'd have to come by and identify it, right. You have to come by and identify, which is a hassle. Right, so that's why it's best. You're right, these are all issues that people have no clue about, right? These are not chumras. These are not stringencies in halacha. These are things we have to be aware of.
Yeah. So pizza is a very common delivery.
Right.
And that I recall, I never received one.
That's right.
A sticker like close.
That's
the
right. So now I know that there is one hashgacha that they do. I think they do that. Now, again, it's not like a great seal. In other words, it's just a seal, and it's a cheap seal. But at least they do it for pizza. Some of them, they do it now. I don't know. See, you have to realize, sometimes, like tonight for Pizza Base Medrash, the person who delivered it was a Jew. So then there's no problem, obviously. Milk looks fleischer to anything, right? Then it's not a problem. But a lot of times that doesn't happen, that there's a non-Jew. So again, with fish or with meat especially, there's a real problem. With pizza, there's not a halachic problem. I don't know if I feel comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. You know, or any delivery, right? You know, like, because you see a concept in halacha that we're scared maybe something was switched. Now again, in halacha we're not scared that did it really happen, whether the percentage is, but in halacha we're worried about that. So again, like, I think the hashgachas have tightened up a lot, that they're I think a little better with it. And again, even for things that are not meat, let's say like bread. You see, like I said, I don't like it when Debbie buys bread from Ralph's, even from one of our local bakeries, because that red thing, which is impossible to take off. But that's why they do it. That's why they do it, because how do you know? How do you know? Well, I know a Schwartz bakery bread. Okay, I don't know. You know, you're right. Maybe you do, but that doesn't help, you know.
It's ever happened that they're going... change when they deliver food to people's house or something, they change the, for example, let's say I order a corned beef sandwich from Pico Deli. So
right.
The guy bring it, he's smart enough to go
I don't,
and change it.
I don't know. Well, there was a story. There
I
was
mean,
a story.
What?
And I do have to emphasize it was a story. There was a story that, you know, there was somebody on a plane and he got up to wash. Then he came back, and then he was thinking, maybe I can't eat it because maybe the person sitting next to me switched the meat. It was a fleishig sandwich. And then the guy said, you know, like, well, he was thinking, and then I was sure, well, you should eat it or not. So then the non-Jew next to him asked him, you know, like, what's your problem? So he said, well, the way the story goes is that he said to him, well, you know, there's a Jewish law that we're scared maybe... somebody switched the meat, and you know it's kosher meat, and kosher meat's different, and evidently the person next to him turned white, and said, "You should know that that's what happened. When you got up to wherever you went, I was really interested what kosher meat tastes like. So I slipped some of mine in yours." Now I never believed that story until I was teaching in Beis Yaakov, and a girl raised her hand a few years ago and said, "All right, Summers, that was my father that happened to." So, you know, just like when you don't believe something like that happens.
It doesn't make any sense that before you go to what you're going to open your, you know, the food on the plane.
Well, that's why they
I
have it sealed.
The plane, you know,
that's
even if I'm 20 hours
why,
on the
that's
on the
why
air,
they have
I don't
it sealed.
Even, but it's sealed and.
Right, so that's what I'm saying.
With my husband.
Here,
till he comes to his chair, he doesn't open.
That's
the
why.
Nothing.
That's a very smart thing to do.
You know, so
for that reason, you avoid again. Like, how long do you? But I'm just bringing up in general. Like I said, with all these issues are complicated issues. I say the Shabbos. What can a guy do? And what can? That's very complicated in halacha. You know, yontif. How you get around the bus of shinsal minayim. All these things are important issues that we have to realize are very important issues in halacha, and we can't scrimp on. Now, again, I'm talking about if Juanita's in your house, so you have to take care of that issue somehow. But, again, I'm segueing out of that to say that even if she's not, if you get a delivery of something, you know, like, especially if it's fleishigs, which is very common. Now, again, I think since my horror story, I have other stories also like that. Like I said, one time I was giving a shiur late at night, and Debbie ordered something, and she told me, "Well, she said I don't think you could eat it." And look, really, so it was worse than that because the restaurant was still open. I went to the restaurant with the thing, and I walked in, and I told the person behind the counter who was Jewish, from person. I said, "This was delivered," and they said, "Yeah." I said, "I don't think I could eat it." And I told them why. Now, the problem, the challenge was, you know, this is one of the challenges being a rabbi in a community. Somebody heard me say, "I can't eat this." Mm-hmm. So while the person behind the counter was getting the owner, somebody who was in the store, came up to me and said, Rabbi Summers, am I allowed to eat here? Words, they heard that statement, I don't think I could eat it, and they felt, and I was returning the food, so you know, that looks bad. It looks bad. And somebody, Taka, did overhear it and came over and said, you know, they were about to eat something. And they came up to me and said, Rabbi Summers, is it reliable to eat here? So I told him, yeah, you know, quite honestly, it does get me a little nervous if they blew this, you know, this halacha. So then it does get me nervous about, can you eat there? But, you know, like, again, it was reliable, what people consider a reliable hashgacha. So, you know, sometimes things fall through the cracks. And it was a different hashgacha than the caterer hashgacha. And that hashgacha heard from me in the morning. So, you know. But in both cases, I was impressed that in both cases, the person in charge got back to me and said, you know, we're going to take care of it. Now, there's, I could tell you a story the other way, that you know, some of you might know, I've been learning with somebody for many years, a very close personal friend, who owns Spanish radio stations. So it happened to be, I'm also close with the parents of this gentleman. And so one day we were learning, and I finished learning, and somebody came up to me and said, you know, it's the father's birthday, so I know it would mean a lot to them if you stayed and wished the father, wish him, you know, this man sponsored. So I was waiting and waiting, and you know, everything's kosher, right? Everything's kosher, obviously. So I said, okay. So sure enough, I was waiting out. I was waiting in front, and I was waiting, and everybody's waiting for the caterer. So I guess like a Jewish caterer, Jews start late, so the caterer, I guess, has to come late also. So all of a sudden, the catering truck pulls up, and it was very strange, because the catering truck had tape all around it, not just regular, you know, masking tape, but it had tape from the caterer with the hashgacha's seal on it. It was like manufactured tape, you know, just for that caterer with the hashgacha's seal on it, you know, and it was all around the truck. I mean, it was like a minivan, but all the doors were sealed. And see, you have to know how this worked. In other words, like the cab in front was sealed off, you know, like this happens, from the back. And all the doors that access the back were sealed shut with this tape. I was standing outside like, this is very curious. And the driver gets out. And he's standing there. Now all of a sudden, like a minute later, a car pulls up behind and a mashgiach gets out. And he breaks the seals. So in other words, the hashgacha was aware of the fact that, you know, and this was one of the two hashgachas, which, you know, and this was before. So in other words, just sometimes they were aware of the fact that, you know, sometimes the mashgiach is going to get separated from the truck, and then it's a problem. And so they sealed the truck shut. They sealed it shut. Now, that's very good. That's what you have to do. But you see, again, like I mentioned, one of the first shurim, this is something that hopefully you also, besides the concepts and everything else, that will glean, but also you get an idea what it means to having giving a hashgacha. It's not just knowing what the ingredients is. Again, this is something which a hashgacha has to be on top of, Basishin Salamin Ayim. They have to be on top of that. Again, whether it's a wedding or it's a delivery, just a hamburger or whatever it may be, they have to be on top of that.
But what about all of these restaurants that you see the mashgiach is outside, smoking, talking to people?
Well, again, I don't want to get into that, but it's, you know, believe it or not, I had a discussion with somebody recently who came from Eretz Yisrael about this. Now, again, really, a Yotzev and Nichnas, somebody who comes in and out, is good enough even by Fleishik. Now, again, are you comfortable with that? I don't know. That's, again, it's up to the hashgacha. It is a little disconcerting, like, again, not to get too far off track, But as the women in the shul know, and my wife is, sometimes people call me about bugs and how you check things and things like that. I always tell them to speak to my wife. You know, one of the advantages of being a rav in town is sometimes you get the perk that sometimes somebody big in town comes to your house. So Kenayinahara, that's been our zchus. And sometimes very big people come to our house. One of the first things Debbie asks them is about checking things for bugs. And she's heard, like, whether it's Rabbi Blumenkranz, Olav Shalom, or Zekas Agarach, or Rabbi Heinemann was over our house a few months ago. So right away, they're going to get it about, you know, about... So we were eating somewhere recently, and Debbie said to me, you know, you're a rav in town. Find the mashgiach and find out how they checked this place. It was broccoli. They had a dish that had broccoli. Find out how they check for broccoli. Right, so I don't feel comfortable. Yeah, that's a good hashgacha. What are you worried about? It's not a go. You know, like, so dutifully I went, and I went over to one of the waiters or somebody, and I said, "Where's the mashgiach?" And it took about 15 minutes for them to find them. About 20 minutes. So you're right. That's I don't know. It's not us, sir. Whether you're comfortable with that, I don't know. You know. Then I asked him how, and I don't know if I was happy after that either. But again, you're right. But again, we have to differentiate between what you have to have, right? So, for example, certain things you really need this is gonna sound bad. A really good hashgacha. I mean, you know, a lot of people, like when we get to about wine, when they're crushing grapes and making wine or grape juice or something like that, you need like more than all hands on the deck, right? We'll learn in Meretz Hashem B'li Nether about what it takes to make sure that it's kosher wine. That's a very hard hashgacha, right? So that requires, if there's such a thing, more than a mashgiach to me. You need a lot of eyes, you need a lot of people, you need a lot of people working on that. It's a really difficult. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Let's go hashgacha on water, right? You know, you see all sorts of hashgachas, right? In a Jewish periodical, there was recently, I don't want to say the name of the company, but kosher water. And that's how they, it's not like just like Arrowhead or Crystal Geyser, which has this thing advertised as kosher water, right? So, okay, let's not get into that, but obviously there's a market for it. And if you wonder why and you laugh at it, it's very simple. You know water doesn't need a hashgacha, and I know water doesn't need a hashgacha. But if you go to 7-Eleven or wherever, and you need to get water, and there's a choice between two waters, one doesn't have a hashgacha and one does, which one are you going to buy? Even though you know that water doesn't need a hashgacha, you'll buy, probably, most likely. Even though you know water doesn't need a hashgacha, you'll buy the one with the hashgacha. We'll all do that. We'll all do that. Now, it happens to be that the water companies know that. They know that. They're not stupid. They're very smart. These are big companies. They know that. So it's worth it for them to pay for the hashgacha, for the whatever it is, because it's worth it. Because that's the way we are. Same thing applies with a lot of things that don't need a hashgacha, right? Rabbi Eilitz has on his website things that don't need a hashgacha. There's a lot of things that don't need a hashgacha. You know that, I know that, but we'll still look for we'll look for hashgacha. That's the way it is. So that hashgacha is a very simple hashgacha. Like they go up, I don't know how often they go up and check that water. Right? There's no mashgiach there every day, obviously. Right? That's obviously at the other end of the spectrum, which is Yotzev Nichnas, somebody coming in, coming out, I don't know, maybe twice a year, maybe even once a year, I don't know. Right? That's a very... Now, the problem is things in between, especially when you're talking about fleishiks, or you're talking about... that gets involved with the hashgacha. It gets involved with the hashgacha. So, somebody who was here from Eretz Yisrael said, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, if it's fleishik, automatically in Eretz Yisrael, the standard is they have a mashgiach to midi, somebody's there all the time. Okay, but what does that mean? How many coffee breaks could he take? I don't know. I don't know. Like, what is their standard for him to be there all the time? Not be there all the time? How often? So again, this is quite honestly is something that a consumer has to be aware of, right? If you, like I might want to be comfortable about something, and you're relying upon a certain hashgacha, it could be a good hashgacha, but maybe they have a different standard, and you're not comfortable with that. Now again, is it mutter also? It's mutter, it's okay, but I don't know if you're comfortable with that. So they deliver pizza without any seal at all. Is that mutter? Yeah. Are you comfortable with it? I don't know. You have to know. See, basically, what it gets down to, I heard this from somebody very big and conscious a number of years ago, that what it basically gets down to is you have to trust the owner, whoever the owner is. Now, again, that's very subjective. You know, even if the person is from, sometimes you get a feel, right? I can know there's, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say this publicly, but there's a restaurant that's under a very good hashgacha. I don't eat it there, believe me. I just get the creeps. Now that's very, you know, like, I don't know, but I don't like the way it's run. I don't get good vibes about the owner. Now this is a very dangerous thing to say, especially when you're shulra, but especially, you know, with any, you know, you're making judgments on people. But sometimes you have to do that. So am I saying, I don't know who the people are. I mean, I don't know who their name are. I just, you know. Would I give them an aliyah? Yeah, I would give them an aliyah, but I just get, I don't know. So that's not any way to paskin a shiloh, but, you know, again, you have to, yeah, people have to be wise consumers, and that's part of the reason why we're going through these halachas is because you have to know what the standard is, basic on halacha, and then you have to make a value judgment of what I'm comfortable with. What am I comfortable with? And if you have to sometimes call a hashgacha and ask them, you know, like, in a nice way, obviously in a very respectable way, because the people who are or the Rav HaMakshirs of any place are usually always Talmid Chachamim, and they deserve our respect. But
is Baal HaMakom needs to be Shomer Shabbos, or it's not necessary for a restaurant?
It doesn't have to be, but again, if you don't have a Jewish owner, and let's say it's a fleshic place, but here's your problem. Here's your problem. What do you do about Basar Shin Salman? He has the keys. Answer is, he can't have the keys.
He's so Jewish, but he's not Shomer Shabbos.
Oh, Jewish, not, again, so that gets a little tricky. That's not Basar Shin Salman Ayin, but I don't know if, I hate to tell you, you know, like, again, I don't want to get too far up a field with this, but again, this person very big in Hashgacha told me that even if it seems to be a front person, a lot of times if you're giving a Hashgacha, which Baruch Hashem I don't do, and I'm grateful I don't have to do that, you know, because I hard to live in a big city, there's other people to do it, but you know, sometimes if you're a Rav in a smaller town, so you have to do those things. So this Rav said to a bunch of young Rabbanim at that time, he said, you have to make a decision. Do I trust this guy? Because if somebody wants to, as they say, shiest, someone wants to, there's nothing you can do. If somebody wants to play around and finagle around you, no matter how good the mashgiach is, no matter how good the Rav HaMakshir is, they'll do it. They'll do it. So ultimately, what it gets down to is, you know that famous story, you know, somebody walked in to some establishment and says, there's a kosher. The person says, for sure. And he says, well, who gives the supervision? So he said, I don't have supervision. You can trust me. It's kosher. So he said, well, how do I know? You know, I don't know you. So, well, look at the, you know, the picture of a Rebbe, you know, on the wall. So you say, yeah, you know, I got, look, you know. So the person said, listen, if the Rebbe was running this place, I would feel comfortable. But that's a picture. That doesn't help me, right? He's not here now, right? He's not running. He's not the proprietor of this place. If he was the proprietor, you're right, I'd feel better. But he's a picture on the wall, you know. So, yeah.
I've had the occasion to call several of the agencies over a question I had. And it has been some time that I've found the promptness and response lacking. So is it that I didn't phrase it right? Is it that I didn't? How do I convey?
I don't know. A lot of it is, you know, how you say it. In other words, like, for example, with that case that we had that the caterer came. Now, obviously I could have approached it. I'm a rav in town, and say to the rav, who was the supervisor, because, you know, like, what's going on? You know? I was very careful. I didn't say it that way. I said, you know, I'm just curious, like, what should I do in this case? I knew what I should do. But I said to the rav, very good, because he is a Talmud Chacham, I said to him, you know, this is what happened, and what should I do? Is it a problem or is it not?
I couldn't even get to that part. I didn't get calls back.
I don't know. So that's a challenge, as Scott Richards would say.
It came a week and a half later. Well, and I had to call two or three times.
Well, it depends. Like, if like,
and I couldn't tell.
Well, it depends. Like, obviously, Hashgachas triage something. Let's say in my case, I need to know for dinner, right? So like I said before, I'm at a little advantage because, you know, I have phone numbers in here that I can't give out to other people. But again, like if it's a restaurant changing hands, so they're not going to call you back right away. I mean, maybe they will. Like, it depends on, 9 to 5. You know, they might do that. But sometimes you have to tell them, you know, I really need an answer very quickly. Mm-hmm. It could be, like, sometimes there's a product that you might have bought. I had this issue just a couple of, I don't know if I mentioned it, a couple of weeks ago. Debbie bought some ice cream, Chovy Stroll ice cream. And it had, did I mention this?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a sticker on it that said Pyrov. And one thing you could say about me, I'm no amoris when it comes to ice cream. Like, I could tell Pyrov ice cream from milk. This was milk. I was mislabeled. Clearly mislabeled. It said Pyrov. Unless, really, like, I emailed Rabbi Eilitz and I told him, you know, like, could you... And he said he's going to check this out. And unless this ice cream has come up with something that's revolutionary... They're really revolutionary. So, it's a very big, I think I mentioned this last time, it's a very big challenge to keep kosher now. That sounds very shocking, you know. A rabbi who's on Pico Robertson, we can't keep up Kanai Nahar with how many restaurants we got on Pico here within a mile, or how many. But, you know, unfortunately, a person really has to be on a list, like from Rabbi Eilitz or something like that. That's why I try to hang them up in shul, because sometimes people... But unless you're getting constant updates about unauthorized this, and it's every hashgacha. Mm-hmm. It's not their fault, right? It's not their fault, because what people are going to do is, you know, obviously companies know, as I said before, that there's money to be made, and you just put a little symbol on, which... And it could be months before somebody tracks it down. That's an unauthorized whatever. You know, palm tree K. I'm giving that example because there is no such thing. There probably will be soon. And the people maybe have eaten this. I mean, the story I always like to say, and we're running out of time here, but I remember a few years ago, there, I don't know if it's still kosher, I think it is. There's a Near East, like rice pilaf, and they make a bunch of things like that. And I'll never forget that, hopefully I won't remember, that they had to switch in formula. So somebody bought two rice pilafs, or whatever it was from them, on the same shelf. Two. In other words, she bought one and the one behind it, right? And to her horror, one was Pyrov and one was milk. The exact same thing. They reformulated. So her mazel. Now, again, this is very unusual, I do admit. But, you know, it's amazing. Like I said before, you have to be on top of everything. Okay, we're running out of time, but we'll pick this up in Mirtz Hashem next Tuesday. We'll get into but I wanted to take 1 second. I wanted to do this at the beginning, but I think everyone might remember from last time we were together, we talked about the concept of Be'en and Belia. Be'en is something you see. So let's say you have a utensil. Right? Here's a utensil. And it's a little ceramic cup. And there is pig right here, right? Or pig inside, right? It's oinking right inside. So if you could actually see it, that's called be'en, something you can see, like ayin, something you could see. So that's an issue. But let's say the thing is perfectly clean. There's no pig in it. But as we discussed last time, there's another issue, and that's something that's nivla or balua. Something that inside here, remember, everybody remember this this imagery? There's pig taste. There's little pigs running around inside. There's absorption. So I think some of you remember that I mentioned that if you don't believe it, somebody in the shul told me that Mrs. Krambach has a ceramic kiln, and that gets very hot, and sometimes people use her kiln to kosher things. And somebody told me that they didn't believe they were coming from, and they didn't believe in this concept of something that's absorbed until Mrs. Krambach allowed them to use her kiln, and it started burning out whatever they had, and they smelled the smell of what they used to eat on that thing. Right? Oh, maybe one here. So Mrs. Krambach, when I was in Beis Yaakov, I didn't give homework. And obviously here I don't give homework, but Mrs. Krambach, being a dedicated person, did some homework, and she brought this to me today, and this is like really shocking. Here is a ceramic cup. There's three of them. I don't remember which
one
was which.
The dirtiest one is the coffee.
Okay. This was, this wasn't kosher. This was just an experiment.
This was just a clean cup. And I put coffee right. in. It was clean. I put coffee in it and I let it sit for 24 hours. And then I rinsed it out so it looked clean.
Perfectly
and
clean.
I put it in the kiln and I fired it. And if you look inside, that's what comes out. This is stopping the firing in the middle of the firing. So at about 700 degrees. That's what you can see coming out of the kiln.
If you can't see it, those people on the web, it's like real. You could see, right? the entire bottom of this little ceramic cup, it has coffee color, dark coffee color on the bottom. See, everybody? Can you see that? See, you could really, even from far away, you can see. And here are two other exhibits, B and C.
One was grape juice and the other was soda. Same thing, left them sitting for the 24 hours.
Again, this wasn't a matter of kashrus. It was just an experiment
of
to show if you don't believe something's absorbed inside, here it is. She
so
got it out.
Next week, I'm going to put them back in the kiln and fire it to 1100, which is where I kosher things for people, and you'll see they're all clean again.
Right. Now, maybe it's for the web people, so we should make it clear that these are ceramic things, and they were absorbed with
right.
something, and you cleaned them very carefully so that it looked like there was nothing there. You put them in the kiln till six,
well, I put them
seven.
In the kiln until I started smelling the food, and then I looked, and when I kept peeking,
right.
when the kiln showed its dirtiest, is where I stopped it.
And she brought it to us tonight to prove to you, anybody who doesn't believe this is like really startling, that if
coffee
you don't believe in
really
absorption, there it is. This was what she got out that was. And again, when she put it in, it was perfectly, by the eye in, it was perfectly clean. So again, this just, so we want to thank her very much. It's really cool. It's really cool. Extra credit.
So I'll bring it back clean next time.
And we'll see Emirat Hashem next week. Believe that, Emirat Hashem. Okay, well, so Emirat Hashem next week, we'll start, as I said, the main topic, the subsection within the subsection, which is Bishlakum, which is talking about, again, a goy, a non-Jew cooking. So we'll talk about that. What that means, what the parameters and guidelines for that is, and all that type of stuff. And then we'll get into other things also, like wine and things like that. We'll get into some of those things also. Chal
v'Yisrael. You mentioned restaurants. I'm thinking of all the wines running around in the restaurants. You get into serving and things, issues like that too?
Well, you mean with Basar Shini Salami and Ayin, but again, if there's a Jew around, or so it's less of a problem.
But they're the ones running around the restaurants
right.
all the time.
Again,
what do they do there?
Like I might have mentioned last time, we'll get into it maybe next time. With Bishlakum, like, because obviously the question you have right now, when you just hear the topic for next week, a goy cooking, well, if that's a problem, I don't get it, because whatever restaurant you go to, you look into the kitchen, like sometimes you could see whether it's a pizza shop or what, and it doesn't look exactly like Hasidim cooking there. Right? And it doesn't look like from people exactly cooking there. It doesn't look like it.
In the Subway on Pico, it's not exactly the rabbis.
Exactly. Well, any restaurant, right? It doesn't. So yeah, obviously the big question you have walking away is, well, what's he going to talk about next week? All I know is that if a goy is not allowed to cook, we got big problems, right? Forget my kitchen at home with Juanita. Forget Juanita. Forget. Look at every single restaurant, bakery, any food emporium that we're talking about. You have mucho grande problems here. So how do we? So the answer is obviously we're going to talk about that later.
Okay. Okay. I should call everyone.